and I will establish a forum.
Karen Ward, here.
Kathy Aven, present.
Stu Martinez, present.
There is a forum, and Ken Bullock. Do we have any added agenda items? None?
None.
All right. Going from that then, I will draw your attention to item five, which is the consent agenda. Is there any discussion or conversation around the consent agenda? Oh, I'm sorry. I did slip over that. I would like to ask, Orlando, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Orlando.
Yes.
So now we'll go to the consent agenda. Questions? Comments?
Mr. Mayor, I need to state a conflict, possible conflict of interest with Bill Jordan, sir.
Let the record reflect such. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. Consent agenda is approved. At this time, we will have public comments.
Did you get any pieces of paper filled down? Is there any back there beside Mike?
Yes.
Chief, did you want to speak under a different...
I'd like to speak on public comment, if I may, and I place my hand up for.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Appreciate you. What, I get 3 minutes?
You get 3 minutes, Chief.
The reason I'm here is I'm here on behalf of my board of directors who meet tomorrow morning. And about 11 days ago, 12 days ago, we received a water bill from the city. And you're probably aware, a lot of people received water bills from the city about 12 days ago. And a little bit of real quick synopsis of our water bill for our fire district ranged from anywhere about $170 to $240 a month. Our water bill last week was $919. That's a 550% increase. Our board was aware that the city was seeking an increase. You sent us some information out on that you were seeking a 10% increase on sewer, and you were seeking a 3% increase on water. No one's really happy about those kind of things, but we understand life, that's what goes on. But I remind you, our increase came at 550%. Did some polling. Fire districts in Jefferson County pay just about $220 a month, right there in the ballpark we were paying. Sisters, just above $300. And the third one we did was Prineville, and they're about $280. So our rates are way exorbitant than what we are. I understand there was a change in the algorithm. I sent the mayor an email, Rick Allen an email. Rick, you said you'd look into it. And at first I felt really good about that, but we haven't heard anything in about 7 days. I have a meeting next week, and I was kind of concerned, yeah, you're looking at all the money the fire district's going to have to give you. And so I want to have some information what I can bring back to my board tomorrow. Our dilemma is here for you folks to look at. We have our bills, copies for everybody. And just want to hopefully get an explanation from my board tomorrow why we've had a 550% increase when we were expecting a 10 to 3% increase.
Well, the short, there's probably a couple answers to that. One is the rate's obviously based on gallons and meter size. I mean, they aren't treated any different than anyone else. So, and we know that in what happened, and if you think back, and actually we're going to have that on the agenda here later, but you know, we had a lot of complaints from people prior to this that were paying many times more than others, and that caused us to look into this. And what we found was that there was probably a system was set up that was fairly arbitrary and not really based on gallons and meter size. And most cities are doing that now. So we hire a consultant, and they're the same ones that have done Bend, and they're working in Madras, and I mean, they're all over the western United States, so they're top-notch. And, you know, there's two or three ways to do water billing, and you all know, of course, because you sat through, we met for months and months and months, and went through a process. So to move forward, as I told you in the email, what we're doing with you, and we just haven't been able to get all the information, and Scott can tell you what responses he's gotten, we're still working on. We have called Redmond, Prineville, and Sisters, thinking, and Corey is finding out the amount of staffing they have during the day in their stations, you know, 8 to 5, how many people sleep there and all that. But what you find with fire departments is, you take Jeffco, you mentioned it, their water in the bays is not metered. They have unmetered water, so all the water goes into fire trucks, which is the bulkier water.
That is correct. Yeah. Both of our water is landscaping.
Yeah.
So we use about 10,000 gallons during the winter month. We use about 50,000 gallons during the summer month for landscaping, something we're going to have to reconsider. You are correct. All our water is currently metered. And your algorithm, though, the difference is, if I may bring to your attention, is that most communities do charge for meter size, but you get a bulk rate with that also. The way I understand the new algorithm for the city of Lapine is you just started from zero. So I pay 5 times as much for water than someone with a small meter. So kind of like if I have a shopping cart, and because my shopping cart is bigger, everything I put into it is 5 times as much as somebody running around a little shopping cart. That's one issue. The second issue we're running into is now we're paying for every gallon that we put into the fire station. We're also paying the same rate for a sewer fee going out based on a 5-inch meter. I fill my fire trucks up and we put it on fires. We don't put it in your sewers. Plus all the water in our bays and things like that, our building was built before the city water and sewer system, so all our bay water goes into, well, we have dry wells because we had a septic system and they didn't want all that water going into the septic system. When they tied the septic system into the city, our bay water still goes to those dry wells, which is why we have the big beautiful tree out front, because it just sits there and sucks up all that water. So I guess what I'm hoping is we can get some consideration here. If you could use Sisters, Prineville, and Jefferson County as comparables, we'd be most willing to. Our district isn't opposed for paying for water. We know firefighters use water and we love water. We love you guys on water. But $919 from $230, when you advertise the 10 to 3% increase.
Well, let me finish. So what we're doing is, since your water is not separated like many other fire departments, I talked to Bend Fire Department, and what they do is they fill up fire hydrants. The Deschutes Rural pays for their expenses there. The stations are owned by Deschutes Rural, not the city of Bend. So actually, it takes a little bit of time to research. Corey has talked to all the fire departments, and we're getting the number of bodies. What we plan on doing, Scott's job, is getting the water bills year-round for the last year from those same towns, but he's called public works managers, and they just haven't gotten those rates, those charges yet, and bills. So what we plan to do is figure out and then sit down with you and talk about what should it be based on the body's use in the building, the drinking, going to the bathroom, taking showers, and then we'll come up with something. And then since it's not separated like the other departments, we will then come up with we'll just have to say three quarters of that you use goes in fire trucks. So your bill will drop proportionally. Well, we have nothing to base it on right now, so that's the research we're doing. And you did call a week ago, and like I say, you've talked to 3 fire departments. I talked to one. You sent out messages to the city.
So, well, the bill due August 10th, and we pay our bills tomorrow. So when can we look forward to a corrected bill?
I mean, we'll credit you back if we just can't arbitrarily do this. So we're checking out, coming up with something. Like you said, we're going to try to come up with something that's fair and accurate that will work based on just what you guys use internally, not to do with bays and fire trucks. So the volume that's going down, the sumps in the bays, all the filling of the fire trucks, washing the fire trucks, that'll all be subtracted off. We just have to come up with what that number is, and we haven't yet done that. I mean, we're working.
We're sure looking forward to doing that.
So we're going to work on it, but we'll credit back to July 1. I mean, there's not an issue. We're partners in all of this, so it's not.
All right. You know. But I got a tough meeting tomorrow morning. I've got a board that watches every penny, and they're going to see the bill come through. In fact, a couple of them were supposed to come tonight, and they sent me instead. So, well, thank you for your time, Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Chief.
I'd like to back this up.
We're gonna have this discussion.
I know, but I want to back it up why this is fresh in everybody's mind. This is public comments, isn't it?
Public comments. Three minutes.
So,
you state your name.
I'm Glenn Costello, 16179 Hoxler Road, Lapine. So, you said you were meeting for months and months before this happened or anything else. You know, when I worked for very large commercial and residential contractors for over 30 years. And usually in pre-con, we call them pre-con meetings, we get all our ducks in a row before we go ahead and start forking out stuff like this. It seems to me that it was almost like you're throwing these charges out and everything else without really doing your homework. You're doing the homework now because you have squeaky wheels. And it's not only the fire department, there's other companies, businesses, there's residents who are on tight budgets and everything else, and everybody's sticker shocked over this whole thing. So it sounds to me somebody didn't do their job. Somebody didn't sit there. You can meet all you want, but if you're not sitting there and actually working out a good game plan to not have this come up, to not have him, have Mike there go to his board and go tomorrow and say, well, really, you know, because he doesn't have any answers right now. I didn't see really any answers. You know what I mean? And then the other thing, everybody needs to think about this. This is the fire department. These are the guys that go to your house and they put the fire out in your home. So right now, it's telling me that they're being charged 550% to fill their trucks up. Then they're being charged for every gallon that they squirt on your burning home to save your property and your lives, and they're paying the sewer for it as well. I mean, these guys have saved this freaking city, I can't tell you how many times. The last time you cut their budget, you know, the $1 million plus that you cut their budget, 2 days later we had that big fire over there on 97 Burgess. And it's like, guy, you know, kind of bad timing, I think. So, yeah, I'm really upset about this. I want to be kept in the loop about this because I'm going to be looking into this. And I'm going to be helping Mike out. I'm going to be helping out other businesses, too, because this is outrageous. I can't see how this could happen. It's wrong. And I think you guys really need to seriously think about it, especially when it comes to our fire department and any other services. Did you get the schools, too? Because that's coming. That report's coming to me in the next couple days. Are the schools getting it too?
Schools.
Okay. The places that teach our children are going to get hit again.
No. Get that report right to
them. Okay, I will. And I'll be checking with everybody. I will go to every single business in this town and see what they do and what they contribute to this community and see what they're being charged. I will find out. And the thing is, something's got to be done. Now, how are you fixing it? Because I heard the nonprofits even got hit.
Well, I think you heard how we're fixing it.
You hired an outside accounting firm to fix that up. This is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did you not hire somebody out? So hire somebody in to take care of the issue with the nonprofits so they didn't have to pay what Mike's paying?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay.
You don't? Okay. So I will have to clarify that. So that's one of the questions I had for you guys.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks. Are there any further public comments?
Do I have to sign any comment on that one, or can I just comment?
I would prefer that we have this item on the agenda.
Okay.
And I would prefer that you sign in for that.
Okay.
On that agenda item, and we'll move on unless there's any further comment.
It's up. You got that sign up sheet.
Okay. Just do that and give it back to me. Thank you very much. At this time, item number 7 is approval of cost of living adjustment for staff.
Yes. Okay, you got a report on that, and
we are recommending a 1.1% increase in wages, except for myself, in our staff. And that's low. Cost of living was actually low because of energy.
Okay.
And I was surprised how low it was when we got that from the Western States Department of Labor. So that was in the budget. We figured actually more than that because, you know, we didn't know when we put the budget together. But that's what the number came out. But, you know, food's up, fuel's down, and that's... we've only given cost of living increases a couple times in the last few years. And as you know, our step increase, we're going to work on a step program for those that are newer hires because, you know, that's something that the city never had, being new. And unlike, I will go out on a limb and say probably almost every other public entity, we are not in the PERS system, so those PERS costs are going up and have been going up for any public entity into the PERS system. Ours is not PERS, and we just contribute a percentage, and it's a set percentage, and so that doesn't change. And then also with our health insurance, as you remember, we have a cap. So as insurance rates are going up, a lot of departments or agencies pay all the health insurance. So if it goes up 30% or 20%, those costs will literally go up $300 and $400 a month per employee. Ours is frozen at the cap. So when it goes up, unfortunately, that comes out of the employees' pockets. So we've been very prudent with that. 1% with our average wage, because we only have about 5 or 6 employees. And if you look at where that really comes out, where we've got someone at $16 and someone else at $17, you can do the math. It'll be about 16 cents an hour, or what's that would come to a day, $1.20 a day, and then take out taxes. So no one's going to be going out and doing much. And their health insurance, if they have a family on there, their increase will exceed many times the increase. So, you know, you can't get 1.1 is almost nothing. So I would recommend that you approve that.
Okay. Council, any discussion?
All I know is we talked about it, and at that time we thought it was overdue. I think we need to follow through and get this to them.
Okay. Anything else? Is there a motion to approve the approval cost of living adjustment for staff?
So moved.
Been moved?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It's unanimous. They approved.
Thank you.
How many people make $16 an hour? And how many of those people have had a raise in years? I know.
Yeah.
Item number 8 is a staff report on the Lapine Cemetery. Corey Meisley.
Good evening, Council. Yes, each of you should have received a staff report. It is a no action report only staff report. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, I want to go through some of the background, some of my findings, some recommendations, and then steps to move forward regarding the Lapine Community Cemetery. So, starting about a month ago, I began meeting with people who are currently involved in the entire process of running the Lapine Community Cemetery. So, that included Brad Baird at Baird Memorial Chapel, Mr. Paul Cody, who currently does interments and interments, burials at the cemetery, Scott, and then I also had help from the rest of the Lapine City staff for preparing this. So I tried to make this as concise as possible, and I think the best way to approach it is that there are two primary categories of services the city of Lapine needs to address for the cemetery. First, there is the process of interments and interments, burials. And then there is the maintenance of the cemetery. So I see I'm splitting those two services into two different categories to help us think about this. Currently, interments and interments are conducted by Mr. Paul Cody, who has been doing that service for going on 13 years. He coordinates with Brad Baird at Memorial Chapel and any other funeral home directors who are having burials conducted in that cemetery. It's very clear that he takes pride in that work, and depending on the length of the funeral service, whether it's 4 hours or 8 hours, he makes sure that the families are given the service that they deserve. So the alternative to contracting out burial services would be to have burial services underneath the city public works department. Now, in larger cities, that's what happens, but we're a smaller city, we don't have staff, and I'm currently at this moment not sure if that's something that we would want to take on, as that would change the entire structure of how the system is functioning and has been working for many years. Regarding cemetery maintenance, that is something that is covered underneath the city and that Public Works will continue to take care of. So what I would like to move to, and I want to show a few pictures that will help give you a sense when I talk about these recommendations. Yeah, to turn it on, it should be. Does it look like it's?
It's going.
It's going, warming up. If it isn't warm enough here already. So I have a few recommendations, some of which we would begin to move forward on immediately, and some of which would be a process that would unfold over the next few months. It's a little difficult to see. This is the entryway into the Lapine Community Cemetery. That's the sign. You go to the next one, Ashley. That is looking into where people can drive in. This is a gazebo, and then there's a bulletin board sign that currently has a cemetery map. It could look better. Let's just put it that way. There's the bulletin board sign. So if you can hold off on pictures for 1 second. So here are some of the recommendations that I came up with through talking with the people that I mentioned earlier, and then also doing some research into what other cities do regarding their public cemeteries. So first of all, given the size of our city, my first recommendation is to formally authorize a contractor to perform interments and interments at the cemetery. And the second point of that is that it's my understanding that Mr. Cody would like to continue serving in that role. What we need to do is we need to make that a formal agreement. The next recommendation is to ensure there is no digging of graves without confirmation of the interment authorization and visual approval of the cemetery map with the deceased family. This is to make sure that a grave is not dug in a place that the family does not want it to be. So that's just a procedural step to make sure that when the process of digging the graves is initiated, everybody is on the same page. The next step, and The next recommendation is develop a maintenance plan to strengthen the existing infrastructure at the cemetery. So as you've seen, to be included in that, I would recommend maintaining the grounds, maintaining the gazebo, the fence, the walkways, the bulletin board, the map, and then the sign when you first see when you're driving into the cemetery. And then to move in conjunction with that, implementing a city organized cemetery cleanup day. And what exactly that means is something that I will touch upon again in a minute. So Ashley, if you could go to the next picture. I just want to show you three different pictures, and I tried to be very respectful when I took these pictures. This is an example of one walkway through the cemetery, and you can see that there are decorative flowers, some flags, some fences, some crosses, an assortment of things. I would sort of consider that right in the middle of the amount of objects that you would see at the cemetery commemorating the people there. Ashley, if you go to the next one, please. This is one instance of, there are many things. There's artificial turf put down, there are many flowers, there's things that are harder to see. This is sort of on one end of the things that are placed there, and then actually if you go to the next one, this is an example of some graves that just have a flag, some decorative flowers, and a cross. So the final recommendation I have is drafting and ultimately implementing a cemetery rules and regulations ordinance. Cities that I've looked into that have public cemeteries have an ordinance that codifies the rules and regulations that they have.
So this would be something that would be an ongoing process. And what I would like to propose is creating a working group with two of you who are interested in this topic and some community members to work for the next couple months on what we want to be included in that ordinance, including some topics that would be visitors, that might be visitor hours or whether they can drive through the cemetery, interments and funerals, the rules around that, objectionable items, monuments, and then just other general things to be considered. You have a list on the bottom of the last page of some questions for consideration. My intention was not to go through and discuss those tonight, but those would be the questions that the working group would be looking at very critically and making sure that what we do decide to move forward with is something that we want. So that would be an ongoing process. Judy, do you have questions?
No, I think this is good. This has been something that's needed to be looked at for a long time, and for the families and everybody connected. So I appreciate this, Corey. I would help on the team.
Thank you. I'll make a note of that.
Okay.
We were thinking about getting the person from the mortuary and also maybe one of the ministers in town and one of the churches and try to figure out, you know, we inherited it because everyone else was going away, didn't want to do it anymore, and so it's just kind of sat there, so we do need to decide. Corey and I was out there today looking at it, and it's everything. It's kind of a free-for-all at this point. Where you drive, what you put on, what you take away, what blows to the neighbor, there's fences. A lot of people are, you commented on putting fences around. Well, some fences are 2 feet tall, some are 6 inches tall, and are falling down because no one's been back for years. Some are bigger than their plot, and they're taking space from the neighbor. You know, there's just a lot of issues out there, and so we've got to kind of figure out what do we want to do long term. And I think that the council would like that. Yet at the same time, it doesn't have a lot of income.
And one thing within the maintenance plan, you know, we do have some funds in the cemetery fund that we could utilize. So maybe part of that working group would be a bit of a discussion on how to use those. Whether it's for maintenance or adding other items.
Comments, Council?
I think it's a great idea, and thank you, Corey, for doing it. And, you know, sometimes that's a delicate situation to talk about cemetery and respecting the privacy of everybody. And the way you put it together, you know, I think was respectful. I think we need to also, I know that there used to be records that the cemetery volunteer group had, and I know a lot of them are accurate, but I think we do need to get a handle on it while respecting, you know, the honors of the folks that are buried. One thing I'd like to add to the list is identifying our veterans that are out there. I know we've tried that a couple times, and there's just no accurate way of finding out where they're laid to rest. And I think that
some say it on there.
It does say some of them do.
Yeah, it depends on the person if they wanted that. I mean,
right.
People put on a tombstone what they want.
Right, and I know Baird's funeral home keeps track of that.
Okay. Yeah, we would, speaking of self-recovery, we would want a dedicated veteran section that really recognizes that as something that deserves to mind.
Okay.
And is publicized as such.
So I join that group too. We get to that point.
Sounds good.
I would like to say that I've been involved with the cemetery for a long time through the veterans, the Band Brothers, and we did have at one time a pretty strong cleanup group. I mean, ATVs, trailers, the whole nine yards with shovels, hoes, and axes to take out the bitter brush, remove trees, and I have nothing but a great respect for for Paul and his crew in that over these years they have diligently and with great compassion performed this work out of the goodness of their hearts and an arrangement with the previous cemetery commission or committee that we had. I think everything, as a matter of fact, Corey, I'll tell you that this is an absolutely excellent report. Of all the things that I've talked about and around this area, there's a lot more in here than the ideas that I've espoused, and I'm really complimentary of you for putting this together. It's a darn good start in the right direction. And I would just say that just for the fact that the city is a growing city, and you can't get to everything from day one. And I think that we've recognized you put a great deal of work into it. It's obvious we're focused on this, and moving forward will be greatly appreciated by the whole community. So thank you. And I think we've got two volunteers to be involved.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, I think the council also needs to recognize publicly Cody's work and effort and dedication and approve this recommendation when it does come time.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is work on a contract.
Yeah.
We'll sit down with him and come up with a contract that you know, on how much you pay him. We got to work that a lot because they've been paying the funeral home. The funeral home paid him. And then we started to get some people that are wanting to go over because so many people are cremated. They want to just go over and dig their own spot. Well, that's kind of dangerous. If you think about it, somebody's out there. You just got to be kind of careful where people are digging. So one of the things we talked about is that nobody that's right. unauthorized should be out digging in the cemetery.
The one comment that I'd say that I hadn't heard here was the infringement by so many of these decorations and the fences and those plots are only 10 by 4.
10 by 5.
10 by 5. And there's so much, there's a lot of infringement by people taking liberties with their, you know, understandable desire to remember and represent the person that's there, that it infringes upon an urn next door or at the next spot throughout the cemetery. So it's an important issue that it looks like it's going to get resolved. So thank you. Any further discussion on this, council?
I think you touched base on all of it. I attended a funeral out there not too long ago, and I watched you wait until the people all left the gravesite. I really thought that was a great thing for you to do.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, council and staff. So item number 9 is street line installation / railroad.
Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts right. We'll in September, take it to, we'll go to Public Works if you think it's something we should look at. You know, we've been working hard on code enforcement and railroad, and you know, you can't, it's like you can't take on 1,000 bites, so we're trying to kind of focus here and there where the most problems are, and railroad, as we all know, is a difficult street. And interesting, I was out there last week, and an elderly couple was there, and he had his walker. He was walking the street. And I stopped to introduce myself, and they said they had noticed that we were working on cleaning things up on that street, and they said, you know, they very much appreciated it. One of the thoughts is, you know, light street lights. Kind of the people that are doing things that they shouldn't don't like street lights as much. And as an experiment, there's poles up and down it, so it's not too expensive. I would like to look into go ahead and lighting up Railroad Street and see what it looks like, see what kind of comments we get back from folks there, and does it have any impact? The sheriff's office is talking about railroad quite a bit, and we will get later reporting out of both the circuit court today on our railroad issue in Deschutes County. So lighting that, you know, again, will it work? We don't know. Is it good, bad, or ugly? We don't know. But it makes sense if you look any police department or anyone would say, you light things up, there's less trouble. You can see who's kind of moving around, and they just don't like it. And it's against the railroad tracks. And it's really hard to make something too nice that's, you know, up against the railroad tracks. And, you know, so I just kind of wanted to get your thought. It's a kind of a path that Public Works is going to start meeting in September. And if you guys thought it was a terrible thing to look at, I wouldn't go any further with it. Mid-State gives us a credit of about $600-$700 a light. And because there's already poles there, that's about what they cost. So we don't put out much capital. It's not like one of the decorative lights. So it's, in fact, it's almost free. It depends on, they go out, look at them, and decide if there's a transformer. And so it's a monthly cost, of course, for the street lines. But I think it would be worth a try. And then, you know, if it works, it could be, you go to schedule, we work our way across through that subdivision. As you would find in most cities, if you go to most cities, subdivisions have street lights that they're put in with the developments. And because, again, when I came along in 2007, there was no city to do any of those things. And we can't just all go out and do the whole town at once. And so we're just kind of take baby steps as we do these things. So I'd like to get some feedback from you on that.
Okay. Before we do that, I think, Glenn, you'd signed up for a streetlight installation railroad.
Okay, where are we talking railroad is where?
It's that street that's at the end of schedule, and then you turn...
Cagle.
In Cagle.
Cagle, we're back there?
Cagle back, and it turns...
Okay, I thought we were talking about the intersection on 97 and out there in 97. So that's what I wanted to touch bases on.
All right.
But the one thing I do like to say, there are alternatives to streetlights. There's LED solar panel. They use nationwide. They're not as bright on the residents and everything else, but they illuminate the path much better than streetlights do, and it's something that maybe you should look into. The power is about 75% less than streetlights, and they're all solar powered. They work in the snow and the rain and everything else, and they really illuminate the lights. I think those alternatives should be looked into before you settle on streetlights, because there are other products out there that can be used. And they use them around the world, I should say. I mean, Germany is number one using those, and with the Autobahn and everything else, I mean, that's what they put in.
We could look into the solar streetlight.
Thank you, Glenn.
If you want, I'll look into it for you, give you that information.
If you get any information on it.
Sure.
It probably wouldn't be as bright, but you could do LED. You know, again, the devil's always in the detail, but whatever information you have, Glenn, you can email it.
Sure.
Okay. Counsel?
I guess I would say that if I lived out there, I would appreciate knowing the history that railroad has, that there'd be some lighting to give those families a sense of security out there. I think it would be a perfect area to put something up and see if it does deter some of the activity that goes on out there. I would support something on that, and looking at all options too.
Karen, anything?
We could use street light. Most of the people out there have gone, all of the properties out there are very old, and they have older dwellings on them. And some of them got together with Mid-State years and years ago and put their own poles up. So there are some street lights on some of those roads, okay? They're not high, they're down low. But I like the street light out near the park. near the baseball diamond. It's high up in the air. It gives enough light to have things visible, and it doesn't illuminate, if that makes sense. There's one thing about that area. It's old. It's got people that have been there a long time. Some of them don't like change, and I think they might accept it if it was on a pole and high up in the air. Just my opinion on it.
Thank you. Stu, anything?
I think anything that the city can do for our first responders, our law enforcement, our fire district, our postal service, you know, anyone that has to be out on those streets in the winter hours, you know, any lighting that can be out there is going to be a valuable, you know, safety feature. So I think experimenting in that area is a good idea.
Well, we'll take it to Public Works and talk to you guys and come up with a number and a, you know, monthly cost, and then maybe compare and see what, if there's some alternatives.
Okay.
I didn't sign up for this because I wasn't sure what it was about, but wouldn't it be better if we're going to start spending money on street lights to start in the city where people are crossing the highway and getting hit?
Yep. There's a process going on right now that will deal with that.
Okay.
So thank you. Our next item is code enforcement report.
Well, we just thought we would, and Corey can update on some of the ones that we're working on, but you know, just kind of, we did go to court for the first time. That's all new for the city, so we did that this morning. And our ordinance withstood the judge. It's the first round, so there was it was a $100 fine. But and as the judge said, you know, they like to stair step that up, and it's more sending the signal that you're going to have to clean some things up. But in addition, because of septic issues, it was $2,000 because they had a camp. They took and ran a kind of a pipe out of the house or something, and they had a motor home that sewage was going. The county went out. That's all. The city doesn't do that, but they went out, and there was the septic and all of that. It wasn't anywhere near close. There was nothing, and they have about four camp trailers that are in different stages of hooked up at this particular residence. And so they were also, the judge ruled on that. The people didn't show up. And we had been out there, Scott had delivered the notices. We certified, and of course sent certified, plus we sent regular mail. I personally went out and talked to the owners, called the people who are at the house. They're not the owners. And they're not really renters. It's a little hard to know what's there. But anyway, I talked to them. You don't go past the gate because the two pit bulls and the two other dogs greet you at the gate. But we, anyway, so we did go to court, and we sat there. We had our city attorney, Garrett, was with us. The county code enforcement officer really was with us. And so now then we will be filing some other things to get it cleaned up. And that'll be the next step, and I can't explain that as we move forward. The judge said some things that need to be done and how it's done. So we'll see where that takes us.
Okay.
But that's the first one on that. And I do have the county working on the one on Huntington that you have raised, some of you have raised a few times, where all the tires and the junk has accumulated at that end of Huntington at the edge of the city. And so the county's working that particular case for us. And Corey, we had another camp trailer moved in on a lot in Cagle that just moved. I mean, just sitting a few feet. It was sitting a few feet from the fence. Now, of course, it's not hooked to any sewer and water. The pipes come out of it to basically the ground, and the garbage sacks are out there. And so that one had only been there a few weeks. And so we sent it.
No, I circled back around probably at the middle of last week, and the trailer was not there. So I had initiated the process of preparing the letter saying that they were in violation of city ordinance. But before I ever signed it, I went and checked again, and then it was not there anymore. There have been a couple of complaints come in that I'll be looking into at the end of this week, and initiating the very beginning process, which is frankly a friendly letter, a letter of inquiry, trying to find out if indeed they are in violation, and then just trying to get that ball rolling. What Rick talked about this morning, that's the other far extreme, basically.
That won't happen very often.
No, that's not going to happen very often. Last summer, when I was working with the city, I created a database with an inventory of cable properties that have potential code violations. It's within my plans in the next month, let's say before the beginning of fall, September 21st, to go back through there and look at the database I created and see which properties still have. I took pictures, I inventoried what the potential fractions would be, to go back and double check that and see what is still existing, and if so, start the process of sending.
Yes, yeah, we did get the house that burned. That's three quarters cleaned up.
The house is going. Yeah.
Did we send a letter?
No.
We were going to
initiate.
We were just getting ready to send another letter. That they did get the house part cleaned up. But the original complaint we had there was all 50 garbage sacks that were on a trailer, and I had numerous people complain about it. Now they're just mixed in with the dirt, so when they cleaned the house up with a cat or something, they went and just mixed the garbage. You can go down to the end, you can see the cat tracks or a track hole, and then you just see garbage sacks in with dirt. So I think we're going to go ahead and send the letter, because I have a feeling the insurance company or somebody cleaned up maybe the house, but they're probably not going to do that, because that had nothing to do with the fire. So we'll find out on that. So we're working our way through those. Some people have asked about the new the log home folks that are out at the where the wood carver was, and they're afraid that that's starting again. Those people, we've met with them, and they're good people, and Edco, we've met with them, and they want to actually start building some log homes here, and they live out by the golf course. And so we're working with them on maybe some industrial site lots and things, but they want to display there. I talked to the landowner, and he has a little short lease with them. What's interesting about that, so if they say it like that, it's fine. You know, they have products to sell, and that's what is commercial zone. It's all good. And so we've talked to those owners, and we'll work through that with them. What I don't know until I talk to them, until I talk to the ODOT. ODOT had purchased the access rights in the last few months along that entire stretch where the woodcarver was. So the landowner was paid money and gave up those rights. His choice, total voluntary. And then he bought access off Drafter. So then he leased the land to these people, but they still access off the highway. And so I talked to the landowner and I said, you know, now wait a second. You sold the access rights, bring them in off Drafter, but you haven't created a road off Drafter. So there's no way to access the property. He did tell me he's going to work on that. So we'll see. We'll give him a month or two and see how that plays out.
But you said he bought rights for access off draft.
Yes.
Who did he buy those rights from?
Whoever had them for sale. Mm-hmm. I mean, he bought a lot, or someone has an easement. And he purchased, he took the money ODOT paid him and bought whatever he needed to get back to Drafter. And it's all private transactions. I mean, we're not parties to it. But that is the access, because you have to have access. Right? By law, you have to have access. And so when they bought the front access right, he had to buy the other. And so, again, it was all voluntary with those folks. But I told him, you know, since you gave up the front, you can't use the front. ODOT may come put a berm, as you've seen in Redmond. If you look at the south end of Redmond, where the big old, what was that restaurant out there, this end of Redmond, people used to always stop at?
The Brand.
Yeah. They bought those. And in fact, ODOT is purchasing corner properties at Drafter because they're so narrow, there's no way to have access off the highway. So ODOT's going to buy up three, they've either done it or doing it, they're going to buy up those three lots, and then they're going to combine them to where it's a bigger lot, resell it. What ODOT's trying to do is reduce all these driveways out there, again, voluntarily. There's no one having to sell to anyone that doesn't want to sell. So it's just them saying, hey, would you like to sell it? And so far, people are doing that. So I think at the end of the day, it'll make that all a little bit cleaner.
and safer. So people aren't pulling up onto the highway out of, it's that cinder, you spin out, and so it's hard to get your traction. And so anyway, that's another one that's going on. Any other, I don't know if you guys have any questions on any of the code things that we...
How far north does city limits go?
Just, you know where that police car used to park?
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Okay.
Okay. And if you crossed over to Cale with me, jog down, because it's the end of Cale subdivision, but as you're coming 97, the entering sign is actually out a little further than the actual boundary, but the boundaries do this, but that billboard that's out there, there's a billboard where the police car parked, or right across from it. Mm-hmm. That's the boundary.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
And that's all a mixed-use commercial zone. So we did have someone call about wanting to put a, on draft, or wanted to put a residence and then do, have a possible business. So Corey and I visited on that and talked. We actually have quite a bit of, we're meeting a lot on activities with different people coming in. A lot of zone change requests. And it's kind of weird, I don't know why, what kind of caused them, but we've had four or something. And so those are, by LCDC laws, state of Oregon laws, that's a, it's kind of an expensive, complicated process for people, but we are looking into some of those with folks. And we may have a planning commission at work, the city may kind of initiate a process that we will have three or four all at once to get some things zoned properly that we need to do to clean up, I mean, and then the public, the people who own these properties want. So I got our new planner. She had a vacation scheduled. You know, we hired her as a contract planner, but she had a trip out of state, and she's been gone. That was planned before we hired her, and she will be back basically Monday. So, well, I told her that's something we want to start on, and that would include several of these. The little corner across from McDonald's at first, now with this traffic signal, you know, that corner is actually private. Northeast corner is private, but it's zoned where it's forest zone, basically, a public zone. You couldn't do anything there. But in our planning commission, they decided a long time ago that needs to be commercial. Well, of course it does. Now it's going to be signalized intersection. So that needs to be changed. We had some issues out at Burgess and Huntington, that little strip mall. Well, there's some things there. And so we've got these kind of peppered around town that we're going to look at and try to fix them and go from there.
Okay. Council, any other comments on this?
Sounds like land to me.
We'll go to item number 11, community development activity report.
Well, we kind of covered a little bit of that. I mean, it is, I think, the one thing that in the last few months I've learned, and that Corey is learning quickly, it's the number of issues related to community development. People call and come in all the time. And, you know, it's just a difficult process. There's a lot of issues when you've got DEQ issues, you've got all kinds of codes to meet, plumbing codes, and you name it. And, so it does, what we're trying to do tonight, where we worked for an hour and a half right before you guys got here, we met and Eric's here, and so we try to maximize when people are going to come down anyway. So Eric was coming down for tonight, so we met with a business owner who wants to do something and work through the site plan. You know, one of the things people are struggling with a little bit, that you actually have to have a site plan, and it has to be fairly accurate, because you can't really deal with it if it's inaccurate. We looked at one the other day, and it had a building on it. Well, the sewer line, I think, was about running underneath it. So you can't have this, our city sewer line can't run underneath a building. Well, but if you just are hand-drawn stuff, it doesn't work. So you kind of have to, you can use a napkin if you're out in the residential neighborhood and you're trying to do something, but when you're in the commercial zones out here, you've got to have it to scale, and you've got to know what's there. And by and large, people are doing that pretty good. And I just finished, the reason I was down actually is a couple, we came up, I worked on an industrial land intent to lease document. People want to come and talk to us about leasing lands in the industrial park, which we actually, we've had great activity, more in the last few months than we've had for 2 years, 3 years. So, but it's, you know, again, coming up with the documentation, because the county just turned that over to us. So what I have is a kind of a one or two page. So like in this one, it, you know, it gives the date the lease would begin. It's not, it's, it puts in writing what terms would be without drawing up the lease, because if you draw up the lease, they're 10 pages thick and you spend a lot more time in legal review. So this is putting in writing in one page, length of lease, what the lease is gonna cost, is there an option to purchase, kind of all those things. And so I've got two of these that I just sent to Edco at 5:58, actually. And they're meeting tomorrow with the person. And so, you know, these are both lease proposals. And leases are good because then that preserves your options over time. And yeah, any city or county that has industrial land would actually prefer to lease. A lot of owners want to lease, but some don't. So, and as you know, we don't allow speculation. Sometimes people will come in and they think, well, they can buy cheap in the industrial park and then they're going to sit on it to resell it. And you'll see that's why some of the industrial park that's vacant has been bought. But it's owned by people that are trying to double and triple their money. And that's not the business we're in. So we're a little more careful with that. And then there, you know, there's a lease back there where someone leased some land. It's so cheap, the leases are so cheap, they used it just to store a few things on it. Well, we're not in that business either. It's to create jobs and wealth. And that's what we're doing. So we do have a couple businesses that moved, number one anyway, moved in out there. We don't know who they are. So Corey's gonna get onto that. You know, we see that quite a bit.
I do know that there's, I met somebody over the Chicken Coop Garden Tour who has leased the building and is going to open a machine shop. His first name's Matt.
Haven't heard that one.
This just happened last week.
Oh.
So he came on the garden tour and was talking about it. So.
Well, they get in here eventually, and then that's how.
I did tell him that you need to come see y'all and get a license.
Yeah. Yeah, because like this one that's out there, you know, it's got a lot of full flammable stuff. We don't know a thing about it. We don't know what's going on. And you know, we have to, there's a lot of issues you have to look at. And it's legal probably to do what it's, it is legal to do what they're doing there, but we aren't sure what they're doing. So anyway, we are staying busy with zoning and planning type issues.
Council, any other comments? Because I know we have, Glenn wants to comment here.
I want to touch on two things real quick. The one about the code enforcement report. You say you're getting a, what was it? You're getting a database together and everything else. It sounds like you're spending a lot of time out there with code enforcement, which is a good idea. I mean, I don't want anybody with a bunch of tires living next to me or anything else. But the thing is, it just sounds like the priorities are wrong. Again, we're looking at situations like this. This man right here needs to go to his board tomorrow, and he has nothing for him. And it seems like somebody needs to back up a little bit, somebody, and figure this out, and figure it out for the people here. And then you're not sure. The thing is, Ben is the one that issues permits for all their TIs here, correct?
Are you saying?
And who do they go for a permit for a TI?
A TI?
A tenant improvement. You were just saying about a machine shop. They just leased the building. They're going to open up a machine shop.
There's a two-step process. The county is, of course, in our building. They moved from over there, so we'd all be together. So
okay.
Whether or not what they're trying to put in there is legal in that zone.
Right.
We do zoning.
Right.
What it is you're building, how thick the wall, how high the wall, does it require a sprinkling system, all of that kind of stuff is through Deschutes County Community Development. They provide the building permit.
So why are you not sure what they're going to have in there? It just doesn't sound to me that you guys know.
No, I don't think they've got a permit yet. I mean, I...
Okay. So, because that was the other thing, too. You're coming out, I heard that you're going out and you're ordering business licenses from all the subs that come in here, like whether they're working on the intersection, stuff like that. And like I brought up with somebody earlier, I don't know why you're not working with Ben. If they're releasing the permits on what they're doing out there, usually when I go to a city, you can't release a permit through a city until you have a business license in place. So I mean, that could save a lot of time right there that you could be putting into other things if you just talk to Ben, building department, and say, don't release any permits until they make sure that they have their business license in place. Yeah. It sounds to me that you're spending a lot of time going out and hunting down contractors that don't have business license and the other things that could be used for things that are more important, you know, at this moment. And this is a big issue right now. I mean, I thought about it all week since this got brought up with the fire department. I think about that fire, and these guys are out there battling that fire, and you hear, we're charging them all this money for water. It's just, to me, it's kind of backwards, and it just doesn't sound like the planning's working on this well.
The planning's working fine. They apply with us for, can they do it in that spot? The county will not issue a permit till we sign off. We're the first stop. We sign off on it. Then the county issues building permits, electrical, plumbing, all the things that are required, and then they sign off. And before they get an occupancy,
right,
it comes back to the city,
right,
and to make sure that our requirements were met and all their requirements were met, we then say it's good with us. They then give the occupancy permit. It's actually seamless.
Okay, so we used to have a binder that would hold all the business license, copies of the business license for every sub that walked on my job and all their MSDS and everything else. They don't start work without it. They're under contract to do that. So I don't understand why we're hunting this stuff down.
You're mixing topics. Yeah. You're mixing topics.
Thank you, Glenn.
Okay.
Utility rate charge update, change update.
Well, we are working through some of the, we knew that when you did a change when you did two things. One is you had a rate change, which was pretty modest, but then you had how you charge was changed. And it, other than the 3% and 10%, remember that it's revenue neutral. In other words, when that was put together, it doesn't increase revenue other than the 3% in water and 10% in sewer. It does change who paid because it went more to a gallon. It's 100%, as the chief said. If you use a gallon, you charge for it. And that debate is an interesting one. I mean, it's kind of done differently all over. People, if you put so many gallons in, and usually it's 3,000 or 4,000 gallons. So if you're using, depending on the number of gallons you're using, nobody goes above that in what you get with your rate. Usually the rate's a few dollars higher. So, you know, it's all come. But then you have some that is maybe not at their house very much, or they leave for 2 months, they don't use any water, they're paying for other people's water. And, you know, that was the whole debate that we got into, and what got us down this path was people were paying for water they didn't use. And so now, it does mean you pay for water you use, and then part of it, of course, is the size of the meter, and that's a change. So we've got, like, the fire department's a perfect example. We're in agreement with them. We didn't, you know, I don't know if they were getting free, how the meters or how the water lines divided in the fire station, you know, because it is older, that makes perfect sense. So we'll be able to separate that out and come up with something, and it'll be the same as if there was a meter in there. It'll be a close test, and we'll err on the side of the fire district. I mean, it's not going to be, we're certainly partners with them. And, you know, there's been two or three others that we looked at and we'll get into. And we had someone call down and their bill went up. And so we went and ran it for the 12 months. And interesting, when we ran it we took what their water usage was last year and then put it in with our new rates. There was months in the winter they saved money. In July is the highest month because people use more water. They tend to be busier if they're a restaurant, if they're using some water outside. You know, That's just, and so it was, it's the worst month to do it, but that's when our budget year starts. If you really want to do it and soften the anguish, you would have done it in January when, you know, but that was interesting. We ran the numbers and it showed that. So we're kind of on people, some people were, we are doing it. The second thing is, if someone wants to change their meter size and it will work from a volume size, right, Scott? Because there's a certain amount of water going through.
Correct.
The bigger the meter, and part of the rate is built on meter size. So, you know, if someone wants to and they think they can save some money, it's how much are we charging to, what's the cost of to?
Go from 1 inch to like a 3/4 inch meter, I think is under $200.
Yeah, so for some people, they would save money doing that by, you can't arbitrarily, because when you get a building permit, say for a building, and it needs an inch and a half water line, because it's got 10 toilets, it's a community center, you know, something, it's got a commercial kitchen. When you get a building permit, the building or the plumbing code requires it to be sized for what it is you have in that building. Now, and it's sized for what, if there's 10 toilets, they assume they're going to get X amount of use. Now, maybe the building no longer is used very much and they sit there empty. Well, you pay for the water meter size because the capacity is in the street. The water is there because 1 year there's not much going on in the building and the next year there might be, but the capacity has to be there whether you use it or not. And so what the consultants have all said, and it's true in all of the cities, I mean, it's very common, you pay part of your rate is the meter size, which is really capacity. And then the other part is variable, and that's how much you actually use. So those are the two pieces that go together. And so I think the shock to people is the meter size, well, A is they use more water than some people think. Because our complaints are coming from people who use a lot of water. And that's, you know, but that makes sense. They're using more water. And we're working our way through it. Remember, it is basically revenue neutral plus 3%. And so it's not that the rate structure is going to add 25% of new revenue. Because for everyone we're hearing from, guess what? Who are you not hearing from?
People that got a lower bill.
That's right. And
I don't think there's anybody.
Well, I'd like to know that.
You know, from $4 to $90, that's pure profit for you guys. Plain and simple.
Go ahead.
So, there are. So, you know, it's one of those things. And so, we're going to work with people if they can shrink their meter because of. It'll work fine. We can't just arbitrarily go, you know, take a meter down because it no longer functions how it was designed. So that's not legal, and anyone that deals with codes understands that, you know. So that's, you know, staff's been handling well. You know, we've had quite a few calls and questions asked, and we're doing our best.
Okay. Let me have to let the chief.
Just one thing. Fundamental inequity that you have built into your system, and a flaw that we've seen in the last 7 days, we've been really studying it, is that your water rate is not consistent across the board.
Right.
Rick's saying, yes, you have to have a capacity. Other cities that do that say, okay, we charge you a base fee of $50 because you have a 2-inch meter, but someday you may want to push 200 gallons of water through it. What's happening with the city of Lapine is, person with a 2-inch meter is paying 5 times as much for every gallon of water as someone with a 3/4-inch meter, because you're distributing that cost across the whole spectrum. So you're penalizing people that would use a lot of water. You're not going to have a brewery here. You're not going to have any industry that uses any water because you're penalizing them. I get the surcharge for having the capacity, but when your multiplier is going across the whole thing, and then you're using the same multiplier for the sewer system. So when someone has a 2-inch meter, they're paying 5 times as much for the same gallon of water. Someone has a 3/4-inch meter. That's a fundamental flaw in your model. I get where you're going with it, but that's the breakdown you have to fix. You fix that, It's fair for everyone. There's no reason why a fire district should pay 5 times much for each gallon of water we use. I'll pay for every gallon we use. But don't charge me 5 times as much for that same gallon as somebody who only uses 100 gallons.
Yep.
Thank you.
I want
to
make sure I understand you correctly, or that you understand the system correctly. You are charged 5 times as much for your capacity. Your gallon that goes through your meter is exactly the same as a commercial that has a 5/8 meter.
I disagree, not the way you calculate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the way you calculate it.
Well, that's part of what we're reviewing for you. See,
fundamental disagreement. The way you calculate it.
Why does it take more than 7 days to review it for you?
Because I think I explained.
You work 8 to 5, do you not?
Oh, no, I was,
yeah,
I was out with the city stuff.
Go ahead, and,
I mean,
that.
I'll
walk later than
5.
Yeah. Everybody wear boots today?
You know, I really like, you know, excuse me. I'd really like to have a little courtesy and respect. We're willing to listen, and I'm letting everybody go over the 3-minute time limit because we do need to get through the business of the council. So if we could just, you know, remember that everybody's got a position here and a reason to talk. And we're making the opportunity for everybody that wants to talk to sign up and talk.
We have the requests out to the other fire departments or the other cities to provide the information. And they haven't provided it. We don't have access to their systems. We have not got their water bills. We want to look at so we can look analyze this and do it right. As we said, if we're gonna back it to July 1. I mean, there's not. I mean, we're gonna try to figure it out, be accurate, and come with a good basis for it. So no, we're not leaping out there with no information. We are gonna wait till we have the information, and we hope they'll get it to us soon.
Yes.
I mean, I sent him an email yesterday and said, "Have you heard anything from those cities?" We can't control that.
Real quick, then the thing is, what I brought up before, why wasn't this figured out before you started charging your services, your businesses, and your customers? This should have been figured out before, not after the fact, not after everybody's starting to get. And why do we have meters? I mean, if you're going to base it on size and volume, I mean, why do you have meters? Because I understand that, Rick. I'm being facetious right now. Because if you're turning around and you're charging him 5 times what somebody else does because of his line and stuff like that, I don't understand. The logic just doesn't add up. It doesn't. Not for him.
I think
not for other businesses around
the fire department several times.
I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about all businesses.
I think I have Wendy is on the.
Okay, I have a question. If
name and address.
Oh, Wendy Potok, 20220 Moonlight Court, then. If you're basing this on volume, and that's what you're charging on volume, why does the meter size even matter? I mean, it should be based on just volume alone.
Right.
And then, if you're basing it on volume, why are businesses charged? Are businesses charged a different rate than residential?
Yes.
And why is that? You want to bring business to this community.
Yes.
And what you're saying is, you know, the businesses have to pay for everything, and the residential, you know, and they don't. I understand if you're going to go on volume, which I think is a very fair way of going, but it should be based on volume. The rate should be all the same.
Yep.
I mean, it's the same amount of water going through a higher meter or a lower meter. You're going to be basing it on what they're using, not on what their meter size is. And that, to me, seems to be the fair way to go.
Exactly.
Also, I'm a little confused because my mini storage, which has one mobile home on it, and we don't have any landscaping, what went from $90 a month to $400 a month.
Whoa.
And we don't have a public bathroom. So basically it's my managers, two people using that mobile home. Now what are you charging a residents for that compared to what you're charging me? And then on my other businesses, last month Most of the my sewer and water bills went down maybe about a third. This month, they went up again, and sometimes higher than they were the previous month before. So I'm a little confused on how you're gearing this. You know, I mean, I'm all for paying what I use. And my tenants, you know, I mean, if I use more water, then I'll charge more water, the more to my tenants, because they're using more water and everybody, you know, is paying their fair share. But I feel it's very unfair that the businesses, I mean, you want people to come to this community and start up businesses, but how are they going to start up businesses when they don't feel that they're getting a fair shake? So that's just my opinion.
Thank you, Wendy.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have my name on the list. But
name and address?
Diane Willis, 52293 National Road, Lapine. I own High Lakes Realty. Our bill also went up exponentially. We went from a $90 bill to a $232 bill. Mm-hmm. And I guess my biggest concern is where we were paying $27 a month for sewer, now we're paying $144. So that brings up, we have invested a lot of time and money in our landscaping trying to beautify our office for Lapine's good. So I've already put out thousands and thousands of dollars for the landscaping. I have to pay somebody to make it look pretty, and now I'm really going to be paying for water and sewer. I'm going to reconsider what I'm doing, because I just can't throw away money like this. Our business is just doing well. You know, I don't mind paying for the water that we use, but when it's mostly going on to the landscaping and not down a sewer, I have a problem with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I passed your cross point.
Can we get your name, please?
Steve Dower.
Address, please?
You can use church, 51490 Morrison. Thank you. You know, we were running the bill about $108 a month before, and we're there twice a week. And now, I mean, I was actually happy our bill dropped down to 79. But that just shows you how this isn't across, I mean, this, mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys are figuring this out, but it ain't right.
Well, it's the meter, it's the meter size, and so anyone with the same size meter is going to pay, and then it's based on...
But you guys are trying to charge rates that big cities charge, and you don't even have a real sewer system.
Yeah.
That's where I guess a lot of us are having the issue. Right. You guys have, you know, I mean, it's septic systems that you have. You're running into a city septic. You don't have a plant that treats the water. You don't have all those costs, but you're trying to charge rates. Primeville, when their water rates are actually governed by the state, because they were told they had to charge a minimum amount because they had to pay back the state the money that they owe them for their sewer system. When I was living down there, it was $60 a month, period. You know, and here I'm hearing people with $90 a month that were $30 a month. So, I mean, you guys are trying to charge big city prices for a little town.
It's based on, again, it's the cost that we've had. It's not that we're, it actually doesn't take in more money. It allocates, it's like you went down to 70 some dollars. Well, there's a lot of people around that saved money because they didn't use as much.
Right, but at the same time, I rent another building, Wendy, who is now paying exponentially more for water that I rent, so my rent's gonna go up. So it costs everybody sometime.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's gotta be more money coming in if somebody goes from $30 to $90.
Well, I mean, again, according to what was done, and they looked at our usage, and they took every account, and they have water meter, they had the meter sizes, and again, I sat in 2 days of meetings in Bend with they went through their water, how that all, and it's the
same. Why do you have to have a different rate for different meters?
One at a time, please.
I'm right along with her. Why is there a different rate for different size meters if we're using the volume? The volume is what I use.
The reason this is hard. I hope you guys. I mean, I'm trying to explain. It is tough. It's a very tough topic.
I'm sure it is.
Well, it is. And the water, we have to have enough water rights that exceed the amount that is needed out there. And so even a vacant lot who doesn't pay in, if they come and want water tomorrow, a meter gets dropped in and there has to be water. The water tanks out there have to be big enough to hold the water. The pumps have to be big enough to give them the water. And the pipes have to be big enough to give them the water and keep the fire flowing. So when you look at this, if we said, well, we got 10 houses, they're all single people, so they only use 5,000 gallons a month, but the next year, families of five move in, we have to have the water. So when we buy water rights, when we buy pumps, they are sized for what you have to have. That's this capacity. The pipes have to, people will come and go, businesses will change, but the meter size ultimately controls what is available to that property. And that's however, if you have 10 businesses with 4-inch water meters.
But what do you
I'm sorry,
about?
That's a wrong question.
How much, no, how much is available to the property if you're basing it on volume?
So right.
It could have the availability of 10,000 gallons.
We have to have the capacity there.
But you don't charge except for volume. So what
pipe,
does it matter?
The pipe has to be big enough to carry maximum amount, whether you use it or not.
But the pipe's there. Let's one at a time.
Wendy, keep
well,
what I'm saying is, you know, I don't understand. You're saying that you're basing it on capacity. Well, if you don't use the water, then you don't get billed. So who cares how much capacity you have?
Exactly.
And if you're billing it on volume, that's what it should be based
because
on.
Because capacity
volume.
Is
and this
there.
Meter stuff, to me, is just BS for trying to get money out of other people.
And the thing is, we all pay for it. It's not just them. We all pay for it for our services. The grocery stores, the gas stations, everybody, we all pay for it because somebody's got to pay for it. It's not you guys.
Their rents go up and then they charge it to the customers. Yeah. And so eventually, even the residential people are going to be paying for it because it has to. It might take a little while to filter down, but everybody is going to be paying for it. Wouldn't it be more fair to just have one rate for everybody, business and residential?
And you were talking about you don't know if that business is going to change and stuff like that. No, this is a good point. Business is going to change. That's the plan checks department. Because the plan check will check how many fixtures are going in to that particular building, how much water is going to be used. It is on the plans. It tells you the capacity, the water capacity that's estimated that business is going to use on an annual basis. And then that way, the city turns around and it can adjust for that building. It's not guesswork, it's right there in black and white.
Thank you, Glenn. Wendy, I would recommend
just like to say one more comment. One of my buildings in Redmond is 16,000 square feet. For water and sewer, I pay $400 a month. For water and sewer here, I pay $12.
Mm-hmm. Something wrong.
Yeah.
What I think is would be valuable at this point is for you to actually come to the city and sit down and talk about this. Because anybody that wants to sit down and go over their water bill, the city is available and ready to do that.
But I think the city council should really consider something that's more fair.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to bring businesses here, you have to be more fair.
Why don't you allow everybody to come into the city and discuss the issue as a whole?
And that's it. That's it.
We have public meetings. Everyone, it was publicized. I don't know how many times, sometimes twice a month, it was advertised everywhere it could be advertised.
But he's telling me right now that they didn't have all their ducks in a row and they started charging these people money that they don't even know. They have to go back and figure out what went wrong,
and that,
which should have been figured out in those meetings.
And if there were mistakes made, that's why we're here tonight. We're listening to everybody. We're offering to make things right. So that's what we're, excuse me. That's why we're here tonight. And Staff has been getting phone calls. They're working on the problem. When you make changes, the space program didn't work the first time. I mean, we're learning. And, you know, if you want to come and beat us up, that's fine. But we're working on the problem. And that's why we're here tonight. And we appreciate hearing this. Really, we do. So, you know, if we respect each other like adults, we'll get through this. And yes, maybe the city will have to make some changes. But we don't know what to make the changes on until we hear from you. In a civilized way. Excuse me. By not cutting people off and listening to each other as adults. And that's what we're here for.
One more question.
What I'm just saying is, if I come to the city and you look over, you know, what I'm asking you to look over, and you grant me, you know, a favorable, you know, whatever, that isn't right either. It should be across the board.
Let me say it this way for you, Wendy. If you come to the city, the city's going to review your whole, your water situation across the board, and you're going to have explained to you what the circumstances and the whys of your water bill based upon the rules that this rate change established to maintain a neutral income. So I think it behooves you to come and sit down with the city.
Well, I will, but what I'm saying is it's not fair for, what about somebody who doesn't have time or whatever and doesn't come to the city? They're not going to get anything changed. It's not fair to grant me something if you do decide to grant me something and not somebody else. This should be fair across the board.
Well, I can assure you that you won't get granted anything that doesn't...
I know, but I'm just saying, it should be fair across the board.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, a couple comments. One, this is a very complex issue, and we're being manipulated a little bit here, and I'm going with my words here. We start talking about water rate, and you have to remember, we're also being paid for every gallon that we're now using as if it was going into the sewer, like was mentioned. That's one fallacy. The rates aren't even across the board based on the meter. And so you start hearing things like the city manager say, well, everyone with the same size meter pays the same size rate. But people with different size meters are paying different rates. And what the differences in different communities are is, yes, there's a capacity surcharge, just like Mid-State does. If you have three-phase electric coming to your house, you pay $40 a month. If you only have a single phase, you have a residential house, you pay $24 at the base charge, and then everyone pays the same rate after that. This system isn't doing that, Mayor. I'm sorry, it isn't. And that's why you're having these fundamental problems with the way the billing is done. And the last question is, can city staff answer the question, has this been rate neutral? What are your total billings for July 2015 versus July 2014? And don't tell me it's a different year, because, you know, the growth is similar. Mm-hmm. Has the same amount been billed out total? Right. You don't know.
No. But we can get that. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And of course, you know, we're actually looking at a one-month period. And so for us to have even the time to get into that piece of it, it'll be something that'll come over the next period of time. But I can assure you that it's already been brought forth that the city's going to sit down with the fire department and look at those conditions at the fire department that we didn't know anything about. We had no idea that your bay water or your fire water wasn't metered separately. We don't know what the conditions of that building were. Now that it's become evident that there's an issue here, the city's going to be very willing and ready to work out whatever it takes to divide the waters so that you're properly billed. And I think anybody ought to be able to understand the fact that how could we know what your water situation was based upon us going to this new plan?
Mayor, I certainly appreciate this, but I think it's a bigger issue. This fire district is invested in its community, and we haven't seen one double new development within the city of La Pine in a year. And I can tell you that Sun River Sun River Business Park, my district, Bend, Sisters, they're all booming, okay? I have developers coming into my district weekly asking about questions and things like that, and something like this, even though maybe it wasn't intended, can stifle development.
Yep.
And because people see it's unfair, rules change for different people, the planning processes get kind of mucked up, and different meter sites and projects to stop in their track. The city manager is correct. Lots of people have come through the door and inquired about doing business in Lapine because we are in a place that's ready to take off. But nobody's turned a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Not one project.
They ask us, we tell them no.
And that bothered me because I see what's happening in the rest of my fire district, and these projects are starting and they are building, and it's with the community is on the point of being viable. And if we don't get this right as a community, we're going to stifle growth. This isn't about the fire district.
Right.
Like Wendy's saying, this is about our commercial viability in this community. And this matrix we have for this water system has some hidden charges in it, the transfer cost. And the true cost is you're giving up your community viability commercially.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but that's the way I see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Since we had no added agenda items, we're back to public comment. I think that we've gained a lot of information here.
I have more to add to this. Excuse me, we were talking about bringing businesses and everything else. It's not just the water issue, it's the planning, the plan check. Who's been doing the plan check up to this point? And I know we hired another gal in. Right, it's a lady that's coming in to do the plan check. Who's been doing it up to this point? Because in all the years that I've been building, and I've built neighborhoods down in California, I have built multi-million dollar buildings throughout the western states. I have dealt with many cities, many building departments and everything else, and I have never heard the stories that I hear from people who are trying to build simple projects in this town, and they're being faced by just erroneous freaking what's called code violations. And when they're thrown back the freaking plans, they won't even red check them or anything else. Then they have to resubmit them, pay again, which is ridiculous, over something minor. I mean, everybody is, and it's just crazy. If you're going to want to bring business into this, Mike was saying, you got to work out this water issue, you got to work out other issues, but the main thing is you have to make it attractive for other companies to come in here. And when they come in and they hit some ridiculous walls here and there that are just crazy, they're just throw their hands up and walk away. I guarantee you, because my company has done that many a times, the companies I work for. We had walked away from areas that was going to bring in huge amounts of money, lots of revenue for all the businesses involved, because it trickles down to all the businesses. It puts people to work. It beautifies the city, because then they can turn around, they have money left over to start throwing in, you know, beautification projects and everything else. The thing is, I've never seen it. I've talked to three other professionals that are in my profession. They have dealt with this city, and they've said in all the years, some 30, 40 years, they have never seen anything like it. Something has to change, or you're going to lose out. You're going to lose. It's as simple as that. Like Mike was saying, nobody's going to want to come here. And in that industry, too, you can be blackballed just like that. It's just like a small community. You get one red scar on you, and you're blackballed. Walmart says, hey, don't look at Lapine, because they gave us a bunch of crap about this and that and the other thing, you know what I mean? And they're talking to Safeway, and they're talking to whoever. The word gets around real fast. Just something to take note on. Something has to happen. Well, that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any further public comment? Hearing none, I will move to staff comments.
I'll keep that brief. We are working with the chamber on the, it could be that the gun show, the ATV event is maybe going to happen after all. I let you know that maybe there was some, the sheriff's office and the state office didn't want to authorize it, so we went to bat, kind of supporting the chamber in that. I talked to Lieutenant Garrison a couple times at the sheriff's office, and now we're going to meet Friday.
Correct.
And I think we're halfway back to from a no deny to maybe getting a bit there. And I talked to Ann today about a couple ideas I had that would probably help the sheriff's office and the state police get past their opposition.
Okay.
So I think, you know, that's good. And they have 100 riders signed up for that, I think. We'll see where that takes us. And Leeward Cities, I don't know who any of you were going to go to the Leeward Cities. It's in Bend in September. I don't know if any of you were attending. I know you weren't. The mayor said he wasn't going to go. He was just at the mayor's conference group. Okay. Stu, were you going to?
I'm going to be in Georgia.
Georgia? Right.
So I won't be there.
Right.
So did you say you were going?
And Corey went down to the structure finance meeting. Mm-hmm. Did you tell him that that was all on for the sewer water? Trying to get as many grants as we can, hopefully, to do some of those improvements. But that'll be a year-long process. See what we get.
Okay. Anything else?
That's good.
Okay. Council comments? You want to start, Stu?
Well, yesterday we had our Lapine Economic Development meeting right here, and Janet Brown, the new EDCO person that's under contract with the city and council, did inform us that there are three new businesses coming to town, and so that was promising. The lease agreements that are presently out in the industrial park was discussed. There's a couple things that she said were going on, so it's all promising from the economic development side of it. I think that's it.
Okay.
For me.
Kathy, anything?
Just a little mention on the east side of where Huntington Meadows is. I think it's the 40 acres that's been sold a couple times. And there have been some complaints. A couple of, they didn't get completely in, but broke streams and that type of thing, trying to get into the homes. And there's a camp back there. I'm not sure who's there now. I knew who was there previously, but I believe they're gone. And there's just a little bit of concern about they wander the streets at night, so people are feeling less secure in that area, especially since two of the reported attempted break-ins. Everybody's watching. It just might be something to keep an eye out. I took a couple pictures, and I can't. They're on my camera, and I went down to, I'm old-fashioned, so I do the camera.
Right.
And they had the print down, so.
Yeah, what?
The print machine, the copier.
We'll get those to us. We talked about it earlier after you called. We'll hunt out that property owner. The easy, I mean, really, you have to ultimately go to the property owner.
Yeah.
If they're allowing transients on their property, that's, you know, and then they can put up no trespassing signs, and if they're there, the sheriff could cite them for no trespassing. That's the probably the best way to go about that. But first, we need to find out who owns it. Is it public land? Is it private land? The absentee owners and go from there, because
I think
we don't want that.
Yeah, the issue has been because we've had at least two fires back there set by youngsters, I believe. So there's a lot going on back there that maybe could be restricted, and that's a good point. Thank you.
Karen?
Well, I hesitate in speaking tonight, because I see that all of you are very upset. But I want you to know that I, for one, need to hear when you're unhappy. I want you to be able to come and tell us what you need from us. And if we're not doing right by you with the water, we need to take a look at that.
and without knowing where you're at, we can't help you. So you need to come and sit down with our people that do know what's happening as far as water, meters, whatever else, and tell them so that you can understand what is happening. And if it doesn't work, we need to know it's not working. So when I look through the room and I see all of you that have attended tonight, I know you're not going to understand this, but there are several council meetings that we go through that we maybe have two or three or four people out there. So it's nice to see you come and tell us what we've done wrong. And we are going to try to fix it. Thank you.
Well, for myself, under Mayor's comments, I think that maybe going along with something Kathy's just mentioned, you know, the sheriff offered to come to council, and I think I'd like to see us have him visit next time or the October session. So if we get to thinking about it, getting that done, and give him plenty of time to put it into his calendar.
I signed today at a hearing event.
Okay. So that's one point. I did go to the mayor's conference this year, and it was pretty exciting. Again, we had somewhere in the, almost 100 mayors, and they come from the breadth of the state. I would say that the majority of them were small towns, and I'll use small from about 9,000 down, because that's what the LLC considers a small town. And there was a great deal of conversation around the marijuana, recreational. There was a great deal of conversation around home rule, which is the nature of the legislature taking away the rights of the cities to manage themselves by passing bills that take home rule away under certain kinds of circumstances. So that was all good discussion, and it was a unanimous feeling of the mayors there that home rule is a right of municipalities, and it is in the Constitution of the state that we will have the right of home rule, and of course this whole process is in the courts to straighten out. The LLC, League of Oregon Cities, General Counsel has stated that he has no knowledge of ever in the past that the state Supreme Court did not carry it for 100% for home rule. So it's a process of the natural abilities and rights of people to sue and to appeal. And it was some awful good conversation around that whole thing. So I think the council, I'm not sure the council's looking forward to the legalization issue, but it's coming upon us, so.
We will, in September, have three, call it extra type meetings that you will be attending. Sierra Architects will be here. We'll get all these dates out. They'll be here. That's to look at the whole downtown and finish up the LA. They met with people and did interviews and everything else. And then, of course, the solutions team will be in here.
Right.
At the first of the month. And then the
that's September the 4th.
Yeah, and that's going to be at 9. I think it's
9 o'clock.
Yeah, 9 a.m. And the governor's office person that's in charge of that.
Annette Leba.
Yeah, we've been working. That's 10 o'clock on the 4th. 10. So anyone that wants, I says 10 here. Maybe it was 9. I say, mine's popping up at 10. But,
okay.
So they'll be here, Mike Holler, and I think Churcher. Is he in your group?
He's the chair.
So Mike Holler, who owns Brooks Resources, they'll all be down here. And that'll be an interesting thing. It's a chance for us to tell them about things we're working on and some of the needs we have. and then that works its way back through the state agencies and things. And then we have state agencies coming later. That's going to be on the
17th.
We'll get to that, and that will hopefully we're going to get the FHA Oregon's kind of director on that, who funds lots of affordable housing, you name it, infrastructure. So hopefully some of those folks will have DEQ here, all of the whole hee-haw gang, if you want to call it, from kind of these seven or eight state agencies and some nonprofits, and they're focusing on Lapine, and so that's going to be good. And then lastly, we've been meeting, you know, we met with a lot of the owners on 97 as we're working on the project, but they're going to repave, of course, in a couple years, and it sounds like it's a long ways out, but an ODOT planning, we're meeting one-on-one with the owners on the west side, and we've sat in their businesses with them, and that's went great, and they're all very excited about the changes. They want to re-landscape, they want new signs, they think it's a good time to kind of clean up, do some things, and so that was great. We did not have anyone that was not tickled about it, and we're going to start working, then they're going to start meeting with people that own on the east side. Now, the east side is only getting a little bit of, in that project, they're only doing ADA ramps, which are required by law, some things like that. So it doesn't impact the east side as much, but they are going to meet. So there's some more of those meetings coming up, because they're willing to meet with every single person one-on-one, and every single one is contacted to meet. And so we're just taking those, spend an hour with each, or whatever it takes. Usually we were putting them like an hour apart, and we just walked the street and went from, we have all scheduled, and I think it's been very positive. So we kind of are getting into what they want, what concerns they have about the project, and you know, more to follow over the next 24 months with that, because it's a long project. And then also we're meeting with, we've got an agreement that we were going to have approved tonight, but that needed a little more work with out at Burgess, the overpass with the railroad. That ODOT project, we've got the agreements had some errors in them. Eric reviewed and we looked at there's some stuff that's not right and involves some of our services and things. So that's going to get all, the agreement will get signed here. They'll get back to us on that. So we have to go to all of these meetings. It's like this thing out here, they want you to go monthly, and they're always in Bend. And so we got three of these highway projects going. And it's kind of, but you got to be there to protect what's going on and to make sure it doesn't get goobered up too bad. So,
I think that it's most people know that, and if you don't, this is, I'll explain some of this. The fact that the traffic signal's going in at First and Reed and 97, and then in the spring of next year, the overpass will start construction. And you already see it now from the BLM has let the contracts to take the timber down, and they're going to they're going to get all of the dirt for the overpass over the next year and a half out of a big hole over by the ATV area, and they're going to redesign that to make that part of a new expanded ATV program. So we're going to see a lot going on in the city over the next 3 years, and in the spring of 2017, this whole corridor program where they realign new sidewalks on the west side, trees, lights, it's a vast ODOT project, and it'll really change the face of Lapine over this period of time. One last comment, Wendy.
I'm just curious. You said that you talked to all the businesses on 97?
On the west side.
On the west side so far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, east side's next. We start at one end, and they're working their way.
I was going to say, I didn't get contacted.
I didn't think you heard the west side. Yeah. They're coming.
Okay.
Be ready.
The biggest issues are on the west side because that's where they're doing all the work. The east side, all they're going to do is go to the the three or four block intersections and put a curb ramp. And it doesn't matter if it goes to nowhere. That's a federal law. They said they have to do it. So they're going to do that. And like I say, it's kind of funny, but it's odd. If you could go right into the dirt, it does not matter under their rules. They have to go to these curb ramps at the corners.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Early.
Moved. Second.
All in favor?
Opposed? All. We're adjourned.